This is Sound Effect. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and today our theme is Family Matters. Seattle author Paula Becker writes about historical events, like the 1962 Seattle World's Fair. She writes about people, as she did in her book The Egg and I, about the 1950s children's book author Betty McDonald. Her most recent book is about her own family. It's called A House on Stilts, Mothering in the Age of Opioid Addiction. Specifically, it's about raising her oldest child, Hunter, and his struggle with substance use disorder. She spoke with Sound Effect's Jennifer Wing.
Hunter is not alive. He was killed on June 29th in 2017 in Central Point, Oregon. He was 25 years old. He was a passenger on a Greyhound bus, which was taking him to San Francisco. Hunter got off at a rest stop. As he was rushing to get back on the bus, which was pulling away, the driver didn't stop, and Hunter was run over. Paula Becker's book, A House on Stilts, isn't about the tragedy that happened at that rest stop. It's about why Hunter was on that bus in the first place. He was looking for a fresh start in a new city, a place where he might be able to finally overcome his addiction to heroin. It wasn't until after Hunter died that Paula was able to take a step back, appreciate the good times, sit with the bad, and share her story in her book.
And I feel like part of the process of writing this book is I really was able to access again everything, all of his life. You know, the funny stuff, the hard stuff, the goofy stuff, the family jokes, you know, it all, I could have it again without it hurting like it had when he was in addiction.
Is there anything that you want to read from the book at all?
Well, I could read you the description of him when he was little if you wanted.
Sure.
Okay. He was a fearless child. Extremes of every sort delighted him. No dark could ever be too dark. No snow too cold, no story too intense, no bridge or cliff or overlook too high. Hunter began to walk at 9 months, to talk when other children were still pointing. He made us know his fearlessness in words and actions. He'd grin and clench his fists and grrr. "Hunter, you're fierce," Barry and I would say. "Fierce," he'd reply. "Fierce like a dinosaur. Fierce like a shark." I feel blessed in every way to have been his mother, even though the road was really hard.
In the beginning, the life that Paula and her husband, Barry Brown, crafted for their three children was idyllic. Hunter was their first. Then came Sawyer, followed by Lily. Paula put her career on hold to devote time and energy to homeschooling the kids for several years. Barry, a doctor, supported the family. The house was full of books and board games, and they went on a lot of car trips.
Looking back, you know, one weekend we went and camped near Mount Rainier, and then we went to Wenatchee, and we went to Yakima, and we went to the...
For Hunter, Sawyer, and Lily, this was a pretty great way to start out life. Two parents who love each other, a roof over their heads, food on the table, and the resources to go out and explore the world.
It was a very, very thrilling and grounded and safe kind of childhood for them.
When the kids got older, Sawyer and Lily went to elementary school. Hunter enrolled in 7th grade.
And he seemed like he was doing really well.
When Hunter got to high school, cracks started to appear. He didn't join any clubs or play any sports. Instead, he started hanging out with the kids who smoked cigarettes, who did a little more experimenting with alcohol, the kids who were kind of the outcasts. When Paula questioned Hunter's choices of friends, he pushed back.
He was not at all judgmental, and he sort of valued the underdog, even from being a little boy. He would say to me sometimes, "These are not bad people." And I said, "I didn't say they were bad people, but some of the things they're doing look like they're bad for them."
Over the course of high school, as Hunter's behavior became more rebellious, there were plenty of moments of normal family life.
Lots of hanging out, lots of going out for sushi, lots of hugging me, telling me he loved me, but also the sneaking out, the not going to school, the, you know, experimenting with drugs and alcohol. So the mix of this, right? Because it's never just one thing. It's never something where, you know, like a TV movie. It's not.
By the time Hunter was a senior in high school, he was smoking pieces of fentanyl patches in the family's basement. If Paula could wind back the clock and do it again, she says she would have done family therapy instead of dropping Hunter off for his private appointment, which he often skipped out on. If she could do it again, she would have tried to keep Hunter more closely tethered to the family instead of his friends. Paula and Barry did the best they could at the time with the tools they had. So instead of graduating from high school at the end of his senior year, Hunter went to rehab in California. When Paula and Barry went there to visit for parent week, they asked the other parents there how many times their loved ones had gone through rehab.
How many times? Oh, 5, 10, 30. We knew we weren't going to be able to send him to rehab 30 times. That was not going to happen.
When Hunter got back home to Seattle, he relapsed and was injecting heroin. Paula and Barry were faced with a choice that no parent wants to have to make. For the safety of the other two kids, Hunter couldn't live in their house anymore. For about 6 months, Hunter was living on the streets of Seattle. Still, Paula and Barry found ways to parent their homeless, addicted 18-year-old son.
And sometimes all that meant was, absolutely, I'll buy you lunch. Do you need mittens or socks? You know, sometimes that's as loving as you can be when your kid is going through something as big as heroin addiction. And learning to sit with that fact was the work of my life.
For a brief period of time, Hunter was close by. There was a playhouse in the backyard that Hunter had built with his dad. They called it the House on Stilts. When he was younger, the shelter was where Hunter would hide out with friends and read books. As an addict, it became his home. He started sleeping there.
We decided that that was okay. I would go back there sometimes in the morning and I would just look and wait and watch and see him breathe, you know? And I knew that it was twisted. Now I would buy him food at Safeway. He turned 19 back there and I bought him a slice of coconut cake and stuck it back there with a note. I would have baked him a birthday cake. That was my whole programming. But even I decided you're not going to bake a birthday cake and leave it in what's basically a squat house in your backyard.
For the next several years, Hunter had ups and downs. He had some very good years where he was able to get sober, hold down a job, have a girlfriend, share an apartment. But all of that ended when his girlfriend had her wisdom teeth pulled and Hunter took one of her pain pills.
That was kind of it. It was like one, and then it was the slide back to heroin so quickly.
That slide is eventually how Hunter ended up on the Greyhound bus in 2017. Paula knows that all of this is difficult for people to hear, especially for parents.
I'm the boogeyman, and I understand that. And I think if I had picked up a book like this when my kids were young, I would have immediately put it down because I would have wanted to put my fingers in my ears and say, la, 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 that won't happen to me. That won't happen to me. And hopefully it won't.
Who do you want to read this book?
I really want people who have kids of about 11 and 12 to read this book. The trick is to try not to let the kid tumble over into addiction, right? So when they're experimenting is the time to try every possible way to get them back. And I liken it in the book to, oh, I'm smelling smoke. And I should have said, my God, the house is burning down. But not saying, you know what? I know this kid, this is going to get better. That's not a thing I recommend.
Hunter was a voracious reader. He and Paula often traded books and talked about them. When Hunter died, he left a small bag of belongings on his seat on the Greyhound bus. Inside were three books, The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest, The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, and The Life of Pi. These were Hunter's favorites. After he died, Paula read them for the first time.
And so in my deep, deep grief, in really even just the days or the weeks following his death, I said to myself, I'm going to read those books. And so I read them, you know, like you would read the Bible or something. I read like a chapter every morning, and
you know? It's like, oh, of course Hunter liked this. And I was so glad to have that, you know, sort of intimacy, you know, reading a book and sharing it. I couldn't talk with him about it, but I could know why he liked them because I was his mom.
Paula has some advice for people who might have a close friend or family member whose child is struggling with active addiction. Paula says that when someone shares this very personal information with you, don't recoil and pull away, as many did with her. She says to make sure you lean into that person. Take a step closer.